kind of a small group. It'll be very intimate. Good morning, everybody. Stephanie, would you call us to order? Here. The agenda is presented on page 3. I'd like to make a motion to approve it as presented. Is there discussion, changes, additions? All in favor of accepting the agenda as presented? Yeah. Aye. Opposed? Okay, the agenda is set. Citizen input today. We have a little bit of a small group today. Or any kind of public participation? Moving on to president's comments. We're just going to keep moving.
Oh, yeah?
I have nothing in particular to say right now. Do you want to jump in there? Okay.
So this is one of the meetings of the year that could be pretty low action, but I think we have a pretty interesting agenda today. I hope it's interesting to you. There are a few things later in the meeting that I've looked forward to for a long time. So hopefully, anyway, so it also turns out to be an interesting day to be in Illinois. We have a lot of bills moving through the legislature that are related to developmental disabilities, and I'm thankful for that because it means that legislators are listening, at least. Some of the bills are not fantastic, but at least they're putting some attention to our, you know, wildly inadequate DD system. One thing that I think is especially positive is it's a pair of bills to support a pilot for customized employment, and that just makes me really proud of our community, where I think we have Community Choices has been doing customized employment for several years, but development, or DSC, new name, and has also done some customized employment, and UCP's job trainers have been trained in it, or at least have had some experience around the model. So there is a pretty good awareness in this community of what it can do. So I'm glad that it's moving through the state too, and it looks like DOORS has some money set aside for it. So if this legislation is approved, it will pilot somewhere. Be great if it was here, but just I'm glad that they're looking at it. So that's exciting. There are a lot of other, I've forwarded a couple of these to a couple of people. If you're interested in some of the bills, I can send to all. I think most people here either see the ARC or Ed McManus's newsletter, and those are, you know, sort of, they're treating these issues fairly similarly. The big news is that there is a bill coming now to nullify the ISC process. So did you see that last night? Yeah. So this is not to say that we don't like the results, but there is a lot of concern in other areas of the state that they didn't even follow their own process. So that the bill would nullify, void all the decisions. So I'm not sure what would happen in areas where the ISC was going to go away anyway, or where the community was not happy with the services they were receiving. We went from having like virtually no bid process at all ever to a wild ride that wasn't implemented according to its own rules. So that's the big news as of last night. The really bigger news is the expo is coming in about what it's about a week and a half. So Saturday, March 30th, I have all kinds of stuff at the end of the table that I can't fit back in my car. And the county departments are also stuffed with it. So I hope that you will consider putting it in your cars.
I just have one question related to the bill that's going through now to, or is being presented to nullify the ISC changes. Does anybody have any, not necessarily insider information, but a deeper understanding of where this might go? Dale, do you have you heard anything specific?
That felt the criteria was not followed. They found out that some of the scoring for the exact same thing just was not used. They what happened is they accidentally let out the scoring material. They weren't supposed to come out, and they got the scoring material, and so they got them. I mean, it's just dead. So it's not, you know, and it's unfair to some of the ISCs who submitted good bids, did the things, they got the contracts. So this is not against all of them, but it's really against DHS. Didn't follow the criteria.
They're,
there was
right.
Some. Who knows whether it was internal staff or political motivation, but whatever, that's been called into question. And apparently there's enough Democrats that are going to pull this up to say, to throw it all out. And it really put it, the other concern was is that this was pushed through by the Rauner administration literally in the last few days of the session. Mm-hmm. And Pritzker first coming in says, well, we'll look at it and everything, but now that the pressure's ratcheted up by the rank and file legislators,
so
they're
there is
pushing
quite a bit
it.
Of
so
pressure.
There's a chance that there's
quite a bit.
I don't know. In my opinion only, I think there's a very good chance that this could get thrown out, and where it goes from there, who knows.
Okay.
If
from our colleagues in Belleville who got a decision they didn't like. So
okay.
And I think, you know, an important thing to keep in mind, too, kind of when this process was moving forward, 13 or 14 of the existing 17 ISCs were opposed to this moving forward, including
mm-hmm.
Regional Planning
mm-hmm.
Commission.
Right.
So, you know, we submitted an application because we wanted to retain the ISC program with Regional Planning Commission. It was either apply or, you know, lose the program. And so, yes, we were awarded the, you know, the grant. But again, we had concerns along with many of the other ISCs when this process was moving forward.
There had to be some concern about just moving from a smaller geographic area to such a huge,
absolutely.
Huge area.
Absolutely. You know, and we're kind of in the midst now of planning for this huge expansion. We've posted jobs, and are getting ready to do hiring, and we've been doing a lot of internal planning. So we're very anxious to see what happens with this because we either need to plan to move forward or,
right,
you know,
kind of puts everything on hold.
It does.
A little bit, right?
Right,
now.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
I hate to interrupt your agenda, but there's one other bill I would like to just have brought to the attention of the board if I could. By the way, this is going to be terrible upheaval for the consumers, families. That's
right,
the worst part
right.
of the whole situation.
Yeah.
There is another bill going through that's got a lot, and I'll know more about it after I have a noon meeting today that'll, because of the subsidies part I don't understand. But, you know, there's been various bills over the years to try to eliminate sub-minimum wage. And, you know, as DSE, and we've pushed more and more to get people more in the community and stuff, there's still, there's that argument for the people that have more significant needs that by eliminating minimum wage will let, if the right things aren't put in place, will that eliminate work for them altogether? And people can, you can argue either side of that. And as we prepare for that, and we've been preparing for many years, but still there's a lot of people that aren't quite there yet. And more importantly, the community or businesses aren't quite ready to employ those people. Better environment right now when there's so many jobs, you know, so much unemployment. It's a by 2024, this would be completely in place by the phase-in period and there'd be no sub-minimum wage. The thing I don't have an answer to is, there's a proposal in this bill that talks about that what they'd actually do is subsidies, though, for some of those individuals or to employers in some way would get subsidies so that they could hire people, and then they'd get that. And that to me is really going to be challenging, how you get past the IRS perspectives and what's wage and what's not and that type of stuff. And so I think that adds some positive if you can get it done, because it allows some people that truly wouldn't be left without work, and that people that have been doing work at some level would, you know, we just don't want them sitting doing arts and crafts and watching movies, you know, with your staffing patterns and stuff like that. So what I'm telling you is, Lynn's probably very aware of that bill. There's been several, but this one's moving along. It's moving along faster than we think. And again, our IR board meeting will have a discussion at noon today, and maybe I'll know a little bit more, and I will make sure I get you that number of that bill. Okay? Thank you.
Can I speak to that also? I mean, one of the things that when Dale mentioned, you know, that the climate's right because there's so many jobs, the other concern with this, though, is the minimum wage. You know, there was a story a week or two ago just with Walmart letting greeters go, that were people with disabilities, that, you know, they're enhancing the responsibilities to expand it to things that they can't do anymore. And so that, you know, that minimum wage hike could have a dramatic effect on employment opportunities for people that we've been doing job carving and different types of employment opportunities for, whether that's, you know, contracts that we have, for example, like at Carl Dining Services, or, you know, job placement on an individual basis. So there's, you know, there's lots to watch with that, not just at the DSP level, but for the people that we're trying to find jobs for.
Get hurt in the process or left behind. I think that's our real concern. It's working. It's working. I had turned it off. It shows me red. Thank you.
Can special needs trusts be used to offset any IRS considerations?
I think that's as good an idea, Bill, as what they're proposing as far as legislation to do that. What they're talking about is it's actually got a percentage, a 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%. I don't quite understand that, of each of the next fiscal years that they're talking about allocating to offset that. But to answer yes, special needs trust might be a way to do that too. You know, I think the key thing is I think this is all – that's wonderful from the compensation standpoint, but let's also be careful we don't do tokenism. I think that's one thing we want to be careful with, is that we aren't giving people that are really, you know, can't earn that $15 an hour, that we're making such a subsidy. And I don't mean that, you know, we all want everyone to be able to make at least $15 an hour. I mean, that's what the whole thing's about. But we got to really be careful whether we look at the state money or the special needs trust. And I think it's a great idea that this is handled in a way with respect and not disrespect.
Lynn, are you prepared to do more executive director reporting at this point, or are we moving on?
There's plenty.
We're moving on. Okay. Okay. The CCDDB board meeting minutes are presented on page 3. I incorrectly stated before that was the agenda. The minutes are from February 20th, 2019. I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Changes? Additions? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved as presented on pages 3 to 6. Would anybody like to make a motion regarding financial information? Pages 7 and 8. Second? I guess I made a second. Okay. Discussion? Okay. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? No. Okay. The expenditure approval is approved as presented. New business, item A. We have a D memo regarding Community Choices matching funds request. That information starts on page 9. And let me make sure. I'm going to try to present this information accurately. Community Choices, congratulations, by the way, on reaching out and finding this funding opportunity. You know, having a little bit of leverage, has requested $71,000 from the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities to finance a project over a 2-year time frame. And the project is for self, if you've already worked quite a bit on this, yourself advocates, on training local healthcare professionals and working with them to understand how to best support individuals with IDD in all healthcare environments in our community. In order to take advantage of this funding opportunity, they need $19,000 as a match, and they have come to the DD board to request that. And if I understand correctly, the $19,000 that you're requesting at this point would be taken from funds from the FY20. Request from. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, so let me go ahead and move because I'm already discussing this at great length. There's a motion to approve the match of $19,000 as described in the attached document and contingent upon the award of the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities grant. I'd like to move to approve this as presented. Is there a second? Now discussion more. Description, discussion, yeah.
Can I ask a few questions?
Sure.
Please share with me, if you would, what would happen after 2 years?
We've had several other grants from the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, and we've been really lucky to have this funding because it's allowed us to try some innovative projects and sort of determine what are the best pieces of those that really have been able to be folded into our other services that we offer on a regular basis. So it is my hope that with this project we'll be able to do the same thing, that with the work that we do over 2 years to really refine the elements of this project that are most effective, that we can then sort of wrap those into the services that we provide overall. So for something like this that really focuses on medical advocacy, I see it folding very much into our community living program and the services that we offer there. So perhaps creating this what we're going to be doing, there's a guide that's in the packet here that's sort of a general guide that we developed with self-advocates as well as some representatives from local healthcare providers, including Carl, Promise Healthcare, and the school nursing services, to give basic best practice tips for supporting people in medical appointments and interactions. And what the new project would be to sort of go to the person and to sort of take that self-advocacy on the most sort of foundational level of the interaction between the person with the disability, their doctor, and the support person, and to create sort of a personalized guide that people can take to their doctor and that they can use to advocate to the support people in their life, whether that be a family member, whether that be somebody from a service provider, to say, we have a plan, we have really clear, manageable steps for how we are going to engage in these interactions in a way that supports people's rights, support people's self-determination, and helps them sort of have autonomy sort of over their own sort of physical being. And I think that there's lots of ways that that can then be incorporated into just the general planning process that we use when people maybe move out of their family home. We hope to be able to share this with other service providers. So if you know if DSC or other you know folks in town or around the state are interested in doing that, we you know both us and the council we very much feel that these are all supports and tools and strategies that we would like to share, and those are sort of built into the overall grant. Plan for how those will sort of then be disseminated as well. Sorry, that was a really long answer. I hope that's helpful.
Could you also maybe share with us a little bit what personalized tools you'll be developing as a result of this grant?
Yeah, so we're going to use the sort of the basic framework that's in the guide that's part of your packet. So there's three overall goals that were sort of determined by a lot of self-advocates that we worked with, both sort of the core group, as well as talking to other people who were sort of more peripherally involved. And that is that healthcare professionals understand that I have a role and voice in my own healthcare. Healthcare professionals adjust to how I communicate and respond in a way I can understand. And healthcare professionals focus on me and use my support people as a resource and not a stand-in for me. So those are going to be the sort of the three goals. That will be the basis for a sort of a more personalized guide. So if this were for me, I might say, you know, like, what are the things that I can do to sort of support the communication between me, my support person, and my doctor? You know, for me, that might look different than it might look for somebody else. To sort of write down those very specific steps. And then there's also going to be, we're sort of going to add a very practical component that has to do with, like, care coordination and using the physical space and just sort of supporting some of those logistical elements of healthcare that are really challenging for everybody, but particularly for folks with disabilities and their family members or support people, whoever that may be for them.
Let me continue asking you some more questions. In terms of your request from the council, the major portion is for salaries and wages. That would suggest you would be adding staff. Is that correct?
Actually,
or you're substituting staff?
We have a grant through the council that's ending until the end of March this month. So it would, what is the word? Supplant. It would transfer the staffing that had been working on that project would then sort of continue their work on this project. So it wouldn't be new staff. It would be the current staff that have been working on these sort of outward-facing advocacy projects.
So what would happen to that staff if the council does not approve or fund your proposal?
So the request is that for FY20, the applications that we submitted and wrote, we're working under the assumption that there would not be any more funding available from the council. So we did increase the amount that we requested from the board for next year. So if we were able to get this funding from them, we would reduce the request that we have asked of the board, so that the burden of costs for those staff would be again split out between both the local DDB funding and the council funding, should we be funded by either. So
okay, I'm a little confused here now.
Sorry.
I apologize. Being an old guy, it doesn't process fast.
So basically,
if you don't get funded from the DD council, what would really happen to your staff then? And you don't get the $19,000 from the board here.
So if we didn't get funding for the additional $19,000 from the council or from the local DDB funding, we would have to look at potentially reducing staff or looking at additional funding sources or really sort of doing a bit of restructuring with how our programs are set up right now. But we would need funding from either one of those two sources as of today in order to continue that work.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I realize it's sort of a confusing setup.
So there's a one-time ask for the $19,000. It's not a yearly request.
Correct.
Next year. The grant is from the DD Council is one lump also. It's
yes.
Not next year the same amount again.
Right.
Okay.
Do you have any sense of how many competing applications are pending with the DD Council for the $200,000 that they have?
I wish I did. I do not. I know that, we created this guide as part of a project, a two-year grant that we've had through them. The fact that they've put this CFI out on the particular topic that we spent a lot of time working in feels very hopeful to me, but I do not want to be presumptuous. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
And one more question with the grant that you started with to start this program.
Mm-hmm.
Being new on the board, did you have any board funding at that time that was in addition?
We didn't. So that was the match funding through that was mostly through fundraising and through some volunteer support. But it was, with both the current funding that we have through the council as well as this requested funding, I think that the funds and the efforts that this board has put into sort of laying the foundation has been hugely important to making those projects possible. So the funding through our self-determination grant has really helped us to build our cooperative and create opportunities for leadership development and community connection that I don't think that many of the people that were involved in the creation of this guide and many of other projects would have had the opportunity to sort of like work into those roles without this funding. So while you were not a named, matching funder, and it certainly wasn't laid out that way on the accounting side of things, it was very much, the two things were very much in concert together.
One more question.
Yeah.
Of your current practice in terms of educating the healthcare sector, in relation to this, what has been kind of the general volume of training activities and the number of participants and the types of participants?
Yeah, so we have done basically three main trainings on this to date. We spent a lot of time creating it, and we weren't exactly sure how much sort of excitement there would be for it. Both Promise Healthcare, immediately reached out, were very excited. They had us present it to their board as well as to their full staff back this summer. They were all very eager. And then the Carle Foundation Day Conference asked us to present. So we were one of the presenters at that event, which I'm honestly forgetting the date of, but within the last 6 to 8 months, and that there was very good feedback from that as well. And we'd like to continue to be able to, to share that with people, both within medical settings, but also behavioral health too. So I think that a lot of the organizations that are funded through the Mental Health Board, I can see them benefiting from some of these. I mean, a lot of the tips and practices that are in here are things that honestly can support anyone. Like, I read through these things and I feel like, oh, this would be helpful for me too, both within a medical or a mental health setting.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I move the question. I move for the question.
On the table is to approve the match of $19,000 as described in the attached document, the D-memo, and what we've discussed here, contingent upon the award of the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities grant. This is money, so we need a voice
roll
vote.
Call.
Roll call.
David Hatt?
Aye.
Gail Kennedy?
Aye.
Deb Roosh?
Aye.
William Gingold?
Aye.
All right, the motion is approved as presented. Okay, under new business, item B, program year 2018 service activity data begins on page 21 and goes through page 30. There's a briefing memorandum detailing specific services delivered and offering some insights, not the whole picture, of the actual cost of IDD services. And I just want to say that this was a really big undertaking, although Lynn and Kim, Lynn in particular, has been looking at all of this data and has probably had a really good sense of it for many years. It was a really big undertaking to put all of this, to gather this all in a kind of an understandable, a more understandable format of who's benefiting from what and how many people that are served by DD dollars are involved in one program, multiple program, one agency, multiple agencies. So it really has helped, I think, define expenses, costs, people, numbers of people, specific people, and there's more to be learned from it. So it's just an initiative, right? The very beginning, tip of the iceberg, so to speak. Talk about this, explain a little bit more, Lynn.
Sure. Do you want me?
Sure. Unless there's, does anybody have any questions before Lynn starts to talk about it a little bit? I'm rambling today.
I have a question. Is our director obsessive compulsive?
So when I started here about 10 years ago, a board member who's no longer serving on the board asked me a really simple question, and I couldn't answer it. And it was, how many people are being served? An unduplicated count of people. And it has taken years to get to this point. And along the way, the project that Kim launched last year with, and this was really like, I think, almost a nightmare for you and some of the agencies to implement, gives us more information than just how many people unduplicated. It gives us that, so we have that finally. But it also gives us something that is not captured here that I think will be of value to us in the future, which is a description of the service activities themselves across the whole funded spectrum. So what's not counted in there are the service activities that are paid for by the state or that people are doing for themselves. There's a lot, you know, there's still, we have to assume that families are doing a whole lot of services for free. That'll never be counted anywhere, no matter how good our data are or how good the data of the state are, if the state chose to share whatever it is they collect. So given those limitations, we're just going to have to look at our little piece of the pie. And I'm very happy to have that understanding, and Kim provides that information every quarter. So it's not like we're not doing anything heavy hitting. We're just learning what is happening with the money. So what was important about this project, and I appreciate the nod to our psychological circumstances because I don't think that's not true. this is two projects. This is the project of the collection of service activity down to who, and then Kim took that information and created a separate an offline database, which is an extra protection of the privacy of the individuals being served, and then sent me an anonymized version of it. So that's one, and that's huge. It's like thousands of cells, but they're all important. And then on the other side, I had audited costs from FY18. It takes a really long time to get all those audited costs because agencies sometimes require an extension on their audit deadline, which is Halloween, but it's not possible for some to complete it quite then because of other funding. So a lot of those audits are not coming on October 31st. They're coming a couple months later. So for me to look at the sum total of the audited costs and put them into a chart takes a while. And there is one agency that still hasn't delivered an audit. And interestingly, they have, so I used audited costs to compare with total service hours. And then we looked at the high and low. So the one that we haven't got an audit from has very appears to be a very low cost for services. So I think that's, we're going to see in the audit that that's not true, because it's really an outlier. So then from audited costs, we can see what the grant pays for by proportion. Like, it's still as promised in the applications, you know, it's 75 to 90% of your funding goes to the cost of staff, which I think has been a good match with the board's values, even as the board has changed over the years, that the emphasis on purchasing staff time is still there. So there was one that was high, and we looked into it, and it turned out they weren't reporting all the hours. At first we thought this is because it's a highly credentialed person with a PhD and all sorts of trainings, but it turns out they just weren't reporting all the hours. And we knew that they had these hours because I saw them doing their job. And then the other that was high turned out to be because a director of a program was providing a whole lot of services. So that's going to happen when we're dealing with staff shortages, where what we've scheduled to pay for staff gets higher because somebody else who's been at the job for decades has to step in and you know, to perform, and the program performed. So there wasn't an issue around that. So it's helpful, but the big problem is that we have partial year data for everything. We also have inconsistencies in what the agencies are reporting. So for any kind of true comparison, we got to make a lot of adjustments, including for this comparison, which I still thought was of interest because it shows you what we can do when we come from those two data sources and put them together. We can see the very wide range of what people are using in services. And then, so we included some profiles, some, you know, people who are using lots of services, and then some people who are only using a little. And what would be a really interesting next step, especially after we have more consistency, a great next step would be to look at their plans and find out what it was they wanted. Because I think we're going to find, you know, Kim and I talked about this yesterday. We could make some predictions. Those are not included here. But I think we might find that a lot of what we're paying for is social contact, that's really important to people, maybe more important than getting a job. So at least that's what the data sort of look like they might be telling us. So we can do that maybe next year we will be able to come to some of those conclusions. The other thing that's completely missing from my data story is the accomplishment of outcomes. So that's something we haven't cracked yet. We've got this new system that Kim implemented does have some capacities. We could start contracting that way, where we're paying extra for really great outcomes, but we're not there yet. And I think you probably saw in my, because I know everyone carefully read my 20 pages of session notes, that there's a lot of talk across the country about how to pay for value. I know Stephanie read every word. Anyway, that's my rant.
Quick question. In terms of when you were crunching this information, did you get any visceral sense of service duplication or overlapping services mm-hmm. across agencies when you have multiple agencies involved?
Mm-hmm. That's been the case every year that we've looked at this type of data, and we are, I don't know if Kim did this, but when I've noticed those, I've called and found out or emailed and found out the story, and there's always a really good explanation. Like, there's usually not very much overlap. It would be like because someone maybe started in the quarter at one place and then ended in the quarter at a different place. There are some people who take case management services from two or three places, and I'm not totally sure what that's about, but I know some of them, so I have a theory. And that's where I come to the social contact is important. But do you want
to? I just want to say to actually be able to look at that was 83,000 lines of data. So we just assumed that some of it was they started in one program in July and, you know, like ended in August, but they were open in another program in August as well at a different agency. I could not figure out the best way to get to the heart of those 83,000 lines for each person individually. I still don't know. So, too much.
You haven't been able to ask those questions. Every time I asked those questions, the answers were satisfactory in the past. But you've really focused on the data instruments this year and on getting all the reports together in a really kind of pretty quick, too. So.
I have a question. Have we ever done, or have we ever recruited maybe family members to actually do time studies and journaling of actually what happens to their significant child or sibling or whatever the case might be, to give us another perspective of how they perceive resources being inputted for the services? I'm just asking a question.
So I'm going to take that as a suggestion, though, because the answer to the question is no, but the other answer to the question is several board members and one staff, which is me, have family experience with these services and can speak to that. And because, well, so my family member passed away a couple of years ago, so also because of her, I'm connected to other family members who call. Who will call or email and tell me about their experiences, but it has been very informal. Usually with an informal system like that, you only hear when there's a problem or a crisis. So recruiting people to do this in a normal, regular, formal way would get us a much clearer picture. I think it's
And even contract great. With them to do that.
Exactly. So it's not just when there's a problem. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's really a very interesting idea. Okay. All right. Moving on to item C, there's an update on legislative and policy conferences briefing. Memo from Lynn, beginning on page 31 to page 49. Almost 18 pages.
I had so much fun reading that I just was overwhelmed.
It's been busy.
So because it was a, I believe you, because it was a legislative and policy conference, I considered it time sensitive. Almost every session had something to do with something that's happening right now that we may have a stake in or we may have a preference for our legislators. So I turned it out really fast compared to what I do in the summer, which can take 2 months. But the value of waiting is that eventually the conference organizers are going to send me links to everything, and that's a much more interesting document for you all, because you can just look at the original and not my scribblings. But I didn't do that because I was ahead of them. And buried in this almost 20 pages, there's a little tiny detail about DD that I consider extremely important to our community, and that is that at the federal level, these big organizations with some lobbying power are ready to take up the cause of young people who have developmental disabilities, who might not be getting a lot of services, but are eligible for Medicaid until they get arrested. And they might be getting arrested because they don't have services. And so then when they come out, it costs a lot of local resources to get them back into Medicaid, let alone services. So the issue for the legislature is fix Medicaid in the in and out of prison and jail Medicaid is terminated and not paused. Right. So they've been working on that. We've been working on that through the committees that I'm involved with for a few years. It's actually started to get some momentum. So now we're going to add the particular cause of transition age to people with developmental disabilities who are getting nothing. Sometimes their situation gets worse and worse, and they get poorer and poorer, and they're also not real visible to the service system because of Medicaid eligibility. So
for any arrest whatsoever, they're just kicked out of Medicaid?
That depends on the state. So I think in Illinois we're a little bit better with that, like pre-adjudication. During pre-adjudication, I think people are no longer losing their benefits, but Medicaid can't be billed while you're in an institution, which includes jail or prison. It's about institutional care. But the side effect is this disruption of benefits that people actually rely on for everything. So, right.
Okay. Item D, board direction. Anybody have anything they'd like to, any ideas, concerns? Okay, success is another agency information, item E.
I wanted to just share sort of a very exciting thing that happened. We've been working with this one individual for a very long time, and his like greatest hope was to get a job at Jupiter's at the Crossing. And he spends a lot of time there, and so they all know him, and we had worked sort of pretty pointedly for on and off. For several years to try to actually get him hired there. And it was always kind of they weren't willing to do that. And just this last month, there was a new manager, and we were able to come back in, and he got a job. So he's working one day a week to start with, but it's going really well. They've been at it for a couple weeks now. But that was really kind of a nice example of really putting that time in and building those relationships and those natural supports. And sometimes it does just take kind of people looking at things a little bit differently to create some really nice outcomes. So I just thought I would share that. And I also just wanted to say, too, that I'm helping Chandra coordinate the volunteers for the expo in a couple weeks. And there is still a little bit of need for volunteers. So if anybody has folks that they or would like to volunteer. I think that the children's area is one room where they're in a new space this year, so with a much larger space. So they're really hoping to be have a rich volunteer base to support all the kids and families that are there. So I'm putting the pitch out for volunteers to everybody. Thanks.
Hi. You know, one of the best parts of my job is working with some of the really creative young people who come through the program. The good thing about turnover is sometimes we get some really amazing people who are maybe taking a break from getting their PhD, and they bring just lots of creative energy. And we have an employment counselor right now who is taking a break from her PhD. She has an incredible gift for teaching, and it's just really been cool to see how it's really sparked excitement in some of the people we serve. She recently did a creative writing class, Telling Your Personal Story. They did e-zines, which I had never heard of. And the group also got into writing poetry and creative stories, you know, self-expression. And one young man in particular just really grasped that concept. He just happens to be visually impaired and so was unable to read a lot of the material. So they started going over to Urbana Free Library, and he was able to read using a magnifier. Because of his visual impairment, he really had stopped reading and really found how much he loved that. And so he started going there on his own to use the magnifier, and so we're still working with the Urbana Free Library on helping him get access to resources. And then the way these groups evolve, so the next thing they wanted to do, we are going to start working with Parkland College with their literacy program, And some of our better readers are going to work with reading mentors to become reading mentors for some of the other people we work with. So they'll actually be teaching some of their peers how to read. And so just seeing that, again, even on the personal evolution for, this is just one person, but this is somebody who's so excited about something that he had given up long ago, and it's nice to see him being excited about sharing that with other people too.
I have a question. I'd like to ask this question of DSC. I had the opportunity to attend your open house on Filer Road, on your facility there, and I noticed there were a couple of treadmills. Is a regular program in terms of exercise, physical fitness, et cetera, being conducted there? Can you share with me a little bit about that?
So there's kind of a gamut of interest in that, and there's also formal and informal. So there's we have a OT that consults with our we have a CODA on staff that, so there's some people that it's actually, you know, prescribed exercise or health related routines that they're doing for range of motion and activity levels. There's others that just want to do physical activity, and it gets built into whatever schedule they've created. So that they have access, which is definitely nice in the winter months. And then there's also people that have autism or other types of stimulation where they need to do something and choose to be on the treadmill to kind of self-regulate when they get kind of excited about things or need to kind of be removed from a situation. They can choose to do that or opt to do that as opposed to, you know, being in an area where they're alone or it's, you know, having quiet. It's more of a structured activity. So it's anywhere from being, you know, health and kind of half prescribed to self-discipline and interest in doing those activities. Nobody has to, you know.
The reason I was raising that question is just a few blocks down from your that facility is Vision Fitness.
There's also Planet Fitness right across the street.
But Vision Fitness is a little different, I think, in terms of training, et cetera. And I wonder if any relationship has been set up between DSC and maybe those trainers at those facilities.
That I'd have to check into. I know they're in the process of kind of building relationships with all the businesses that are in that area, and they've got a really good one with Salt and Light. I know we do have somebody that's working at Planet Fitness several days a week, and then there's people that are just accessing it. I think there's two at that Planet Fitness specifically. Right. But Vision Fitness, I'm not sure. I'll ask about that because I'm not familiar with whether there's activity happening there or not. And we also have a great relationship with the Y, and have passes that can be used either day or night for a number of people to go with support if needed to access Y, whether that's for, you know, free time or scheduled activities, swimming, exercise classes, fitness, things like that. So it's definitely promoted, but I'll check on the Vision Fitness. Thanks for the suggestion.
One more comment about that, too. In addition to the YMCA, we do have regular fitness groups that go to the Leonard Center and then also to a fitness center in Rantoul for some of our people who live in the Rantoul area.
That's great. Thank you.
If I could, I don't think there's another place on the agenda, and I'm not just stuck on this, but the subminimum wage bill, House bill number is 3340. If anybody wants to look, you go to Illinois Gov and look up that. And, Lynn, I just sent you the email that has the briefing, which is pretty thorough. It doesn't have a couple of the answers, but if you want to share that with the board, you're welcome to do that also. Thank you.
Okay, we had Christina Klein, our service coordinator, came across a client that was in need of the PUNS, so she had worked with Mary at regional planning in getting the client on PUNS. Mary determined that she didn't feel like the individual met the criteria for services, so what we ended up doing, and Mary recommended that we get further psychological testing done. So we have worked with DSC several times through the years. And so we approached Ron and Heather about getting this individual a psychological through their psychologists that they have come to DSC, and that individual was seen, and it was determined that that individual did meet the criteria, so we're able to serve them, that individual now. So we were very pleased about how that all worked out.
I just wanted to make a point to say that I know that the staff are very familiar, but the respite notice for funding opportunity was posted, I think, on Monday. It might have been last Friday. I'm not sure. But anyway, there's definite, you know, we're looking over the application and have a meeting tomorrow to really kind of review. There's three different components to the respite notice in terms of either group, in-home, or voucher respite programs, and it kind of predicts the number of applications that they think that they'll give statewide, which is kind of interesting. But we're reviewing the information to see, you know, what is kind of a best fit and would meet the needs. And, you know, one of the benefits that we anticipate from that is not just people that are waiting for that service, but a real good look at the people that are in the IFS program that are currently county funded, that when we lost respite many years ago, the kind of the critical families that were in significant need started receiving that support through individual and family support funded by this group. But, you know, I'm hoping to kind of establish that some of those people would then go back to being eligible and receiving state respite funding, which would then, you know, give some room for some people that are waiting for services. So we're hopeful, but, you know, the money is limited. So I just wanted to stress that we are planning to apply, and I don't know if there's other providers or other agencies that are looking to do the same. So
did you say the potential timeline for that, Patty, or you?
Funding, the program should start July 1. I believe that the applications are due April 17th, and decisions are made, I think, almost 30 days later, like by May 17th or May 20th or something like that. But the intent is for it to be begin FY20.
Okay, moving on to old business. Meeting schedules are posted on page 50 to 53 for the MHB and DDB. Our acronyms are posted on pages 54 through 60. Lynn, is there any information that you'd like to share with us about MHB activity?
The Mental Health Board has a meeting at 5:30 this evening. They have some of the same business that you do. And then next week, that's all I'm going to say. And then next week, you have a joint study session, but it is around a very specific topic, so it's highly optional. It's about how to use the online system to look at applications or reports. So the person that we work with on that system will be here. So if there aren't a lot of board members here, I might ask him to show me how to use the claim system. So anyway, we're bringing him here. The board packet is prepared. Thank you, Stephanie and Kim, for getting that out so fast. Hope to see you next week.
Okay, staff reports are included, one from Kim, one from Stephanie, Chris, and one from Chandra. We have Kim and Stephanie here, so if either one of you want to jump in, feel free to, or no? Oh, Lynn's going to jump in. Okay.
You sort of, you know, it's like a Pandora's box. Okay, so Stephanie's probably not going to say it, but she pulled off a miracle last month. She really did, and she's sitting next to the other miracle worker we have. I'm really proud of the work that has happened this year across agencies and in our office, and Stephanie has taken the lead on this. It is to support some people who are trying to make a little bit of money off of their art or books or other original creations, and we lost the venue just like that, and Stephanie went out the very same day and got a better venue. So now we have a monthly art show at the International Galleries, and she is managing that very carefully because, as we've learned, this is about the relationship with the host site. So I'm not going to hurt it. All Stephanie. And then Vicky has been organizing people to use the the farmers market while it's inside at Lincoln Square. I think we're going to stop. April 27th will be our last market, but she's got a different artist every week. They're not making a lot of money, but they're doing it, and we learn from that. We're not going to support it when it goes outside because we don't want people to get hurt because it's so hot, and it's also a really long day. So if we learn that they really, really, really want to do it and it'd be really easy to support it, I might change my mind, but I was pretty persuaded we should stop after April 27th. So anyway, thank you to both of you. Also, in your staff report from Chris Wilson is unique. It is actually an annual report of all the funds. And what's kind of cool is it includes the Scylla Fund. We have never had an annual report on the Scylla Fund. You had it. It's really, really, it's a real simple presentation. It's just a profit and loss statement. But I think it's helpful. We had some surprises in the Scylla budget because we had to put a roof on one of the houses. And we decided that's what we should always plan for. So that's it.
Okay, I have no announcements. I don't know if anybody else has any announcements. So that being the case, we are adjourned. Thank you.